This is Iconic.
So this is the second part on chaos in 13th Age Glorantha. Last week was our introduction to the episode, as well as what is chaos in Glorantha and why do they break the rules. And this episode is going to be talking about monsters and how to use them in both Glorantha campaigns and in your Dragon Empire game. Let's talk about chaos beasts, because in the 13th Age Glorantha rulebook, the main expression of chaos is the monsters that you fight. And these are all great classic Glorantan monsters. We're going to just hit them high level, kind of talk a little bit about their place in the world, why they represent chaos, and sort of what features kind of reinforce that. And I'm going to start off with the brew. I, as a GM, love the brew. They are way scarier than beastmen or you know, Warhammer or orcs of D&D. But they fill sort of the same role. They fill that role of the thing in the woods that are almost like you, except something has gone horribly, horribly wrong. Right? They are the part of chaos. There's a lot of chaos that's just off from baseline for Glorantha. And the brew is kind of our touchstone for that. Evan and I will probably do a very long video on exploring Glorantha about the brew and all of their myths, because there are three chaos gods, Ragnalar, Malia, and Theed, and each one has a special relationship with the brew. I really think that one may be marked mature audiences only, because the brew are scary. But let's just talk about the brew. Think beastmen with chaotic features and diseases. In fact, I love the fact that, right, 13th Age doesn't deal with diseases, don't really, like, right, hand-wavy, high-level, right, this is not the stuff that of heroic role-playing. You know, except for that one time in 13th Age Glorantha where they're like, you know what we have to put in? Rules for chaos diseases, because that is core to the brew. So, yeah, brew. Think beastmen, chaos, diseases. There are just a ton of great monsters under the brew category. Nick, Mark, Becca, Evan, like, as you were looking through this, what stood out to you about the brew?
Just as far as features go, they all had some sort of animalistic type persona to them. And then at the same time, it was realizing, again, these things are procreating with, like, everything. And so they're not going to look the same, right? Even if you're not throwing the minor chaotic features at them and changing the appearances in that way, just if you put two of the same statted brew on the table together at the same time, they're going to look very, very different from each other. But honestly, I got done reading through this section again. I was like, I think I need to go wash my hands, because it's just...
Yeah, you brought up this point, and it's... It's in a lot of ways they fill sort of the same role in terrifying us as the viewer, if you will, whether we are the player or the GM or just, you know, reading it. They fill sort of the same niche that the xenomorph in Alien fills. It's something that's completely inhuman. It will infest you. And it will consume you and turn you. I mean, there's a little bit of this in the Scorpion when we get to there. But there's this. Every time the alien comes in contact with something different, we get a different version of the alien. And so there's a lot of that body horror. There's a lot of that. I'm going to use the term violation, right? It's a ubiquitous violation. The face hugger does not care who or what you are. You are there for its use. The brew have a lot of parallels to that.
Yeah, and what makes it scary, it's not just beastmen that are, you know, bred somewhere else. In the brew convert, you could have a warrior from your clan that went off, gets infected, you know, and grows a goat face in its chest. So that's just scary, seeing somebody you might have known and they're converted. So
yeah, and we'll get to that when we get to the Scorpion Men as well, and the Thanatari. They both have sort of that what was known has been corrupted and repurposed.
Becca? Good. So enough about Rue. Let's skip and take a shower.
Thank you. I was just going to say, in games that we have played as a player, knowing that someone was taken by Brew, your goal wasn't necessarily to rescue them, but was to make sure they died because they didn't want to keep living and you didn't want them to keep living. And I think that the 13th Age version of it here is very, demonstrates that very well. I mean, we all are saying they're gross and we want to go bathe and clean our eyes and minds and everything else. But if you have an enemy where you go, I don't want to rescue the person from it, I just want to make sure their suffering doesn't end. That's a really intense moment for any player.
All right, Mark, why don't you bring us into the next monster, which there are some chaos monsters that are terrifying, and then there are some chaos monsters that just make you go, what? Why don't you talk to us about the dragon snail?
So, the muck dweller dragon snail. I mean, it's nothing to be afraid of. You know, it's a snail. It's a little bit big. It's got a shell on its back, you know, little slime trail. It's a piece of cake. Don't worry about it. Go find some brew to fight. So, as everything else, they have their chaotic bits. One of the things that I like is growing second heads, and then when you defeat them, instead of it just dying, it's poof, more hit points. Like, what? Wait a minute. How did what? It's a typical chaos beast where weird things go wrong. Not quite like a Hydra where you gotta kind of do multiple things, but where it can kind of rejuvenate itself when you eliminate a head. I really like the different kind of breath weapons they have, again, representing, because it's not just, oh, this is a red dragon, it breathes fire. This thing has all kinds of different breath weapons that, so you don't know what really to prepare for or what can work. Or
one of its breath weapons is leeches. It breathes a spray of blood-sucking chaos leeches.
Yeah, it just looks fun because they got a couple versions of it. They've got the Marauder Dragon, Slime Beast Dragon. So different strengths, in case the weak ones aren't strong enough for you, they do escalate up.
Well, actually, interesting, they escalate down because if you look at the arc, they're triple strength at adventurer tier and they're double strength at champion tier and then they're normal strength at epic tier. You know, it says in the little developer's comment, they're designed to be like, terrify your players when they're at adventurer tier, and by epic tier, you're like, yep, now we wade through like six dragon snails in a single fight. We're awesome. And then they fight Brew.
Yes, and I also like their glistening shell, so if you aren't engaged, they've got resist damage, so you want to, and I'm like, okay, I'm the archer, I'm going to stay back and just, it's going to be harder, they want you to engage, so it's kind of like, do I engage them, or stand off, or yeah. No good choices.
Evan, do you have any good insight into the dragon snail in the larger Glorantha setting? I will be honest, I have never used a dragon snail.
Yes, I have a little bit. Again, it's in the vein of chaos taking everything normal and then just twisting it, blowing it out of proportion, making it perverted and deadly. You know, some things talk about the dragon snails being, you know, pieces of the devil, of the great chaos god Waspa, destroyed by Stormbull, but not obliterated, you know, still his fragments torment the world, and they come in many pieces, but the dragon snail is one of them. You know, a snail, you know, a small harmless creature blown into enormous proportions with horrific and terrifying attacks that exists for no other reason than to just sort of poison the landscape and consume and obliterate life. Very, very chaotic.
So the next one is good old raisins and peanut. Wait, no, it is Gorp. Nick, do you want to talk to us? So the two things I love about Gorp before we get into it, it is one of my favorite pieces of art from the book, as disgusting as it is. And then I love the little line, in Snakepipe Hollow, Gorp eats you. I feel like that's just... So, Nick, tell us about Gorp.
Yeah, they're icky ooze-ish monsters. They're not your gelatinous cube, but they might be. You can certainly port the oozes from Core 13th Age into Glorantha and give them some chaotic features and make them gorps. I should say they're not just shapeless creatures. These are actually monsters. There's a little bit of information given in the book regarding that there are gods that they worship and interact with, so that there is a little bit more of intelligence here. But at the same time, they're just as hard to hit, just as hard to deal damage against. Again, a little bit of a rule-breaking thing is, usually you expect that if the higher you roll, the more damage you're going to be dealing, right? Even if something has resist 16 plus or resist 18 plus, the higher you roll, you're actually going to be dealing damage. But with Gorps, you want to roll high enough to hit, but you don't want to roll too high, because once you get above 16, they gain resistance. So you want to be hitting them with something under 16 and still hitting their AC or MD or whatever it is. But if you roll too high, then you're just not going to be dealing nearly as much damage as you think they're going to. Again, just another, the piece of art is, it's terrifying to look at. It just looks like somebody climbed out of an acid bath. It looks like somebody climbed out of an acid bath, picked up a sword, and now is coming after you. It's just yuck.
All right, Evan, the Jack-O-Bear is one of those kind of iconic, really weird creatures in Glorantha. I know that in previous editions, I don't feel that the art did them as much justice as the terrifying thing that they are. You want to give us a brief overview of the Jack-O-Bear?
Well, I think the Jack-O-Bear epitomizes in some ways the whimsy that exists in Glorantha. You know, people, of course, attach themselves to ducks, and it can be very divisive because, you know, the idea of ducks, anthropomorphic ducks, and having something so comedic and preposterous in your game. And this is that, a big scary bear with a pumpkin jack-o'-lantern on its head, or at least that's the description. But then, you know, with the twist of chaos. The illustration in the 13th Age Glorantha core book does paint it as more terrifying, but of course we're not seeing in color. I mean, I think if we colored that head again to look like a pumpkin carved into a jack-o'-lantern, you would have this mix of terror and incredulity as this thing is coming at you. And I've always loved the classic illustration by Janelle Jacques for Griffin Mountain of the Jack-O-Bear zapping a warrior on the front of it. So, you know, it is a big bear with bizarre chaos powers concentrating and flowing out of its big pumpkin head. And the terrifying thing about it is that not only is it physically imposing, but its magic affects your mind and weakens and even stuns you, and you know exactly why those things happen to you, because once you're weakened and stunned, it will come and eat you. I mean, that's what it exists to do. You think, it's all fun and games and it looks silly until you find out that it's a super predator and it's knocking down your defenses and you know, chewing off your arm. So it's fun because it has this, you know, it's just sort of the gonzo side. You know, Glorantha encompasses, you know, you can have very serious mythological discussions about the hero's journey and the deep psychology of culture and religion. And then this bizarre thing that just comes out of, you know, the forest or the swamp or some horrible cave system, and it's terrifying your players.
Well, and before, if you're listening, you're coming strictly from 13th Age and you're like, psh, that sounds like a dumb monster. Look at the owl bear. I'm just going to be honest, right? Jack-O-Bear, owl bear, they fill sort of the same role in both. They're both equally absurd until they're ripping your arms off and then you're terrified of them. Now, the next chaos monster, and this is okay. one that I'm going to ask Becca to kind of comment with on me, because she has encountered them in my RuneQuest game, the Kroshti. There is this chaos beast, or this chaos goddess, that represents the consumption and the greed that, that if we allow it to, will consume all of us. And they're going back to kind of Geiger and the Xenomorph. I realize that I'm bringing this back around to Alien quite a bit. On page 268 of the rule book, the Karsht kid, that looks a lot like a facehugger. I'm just going to say it. It is all limbs and claws and mouth and tongue, and there's really not anything else to it. But Becca, you've encountered these in our RuneQuest game. They tend to eat their way through myths. They tend to eat their way through everything. They represent sort of the consumptive side of chaos. What has your experience been like? What are your thoughts on these monsters?
Well, in that game in particular, I did have a character that was consumed by not a cursed kid, but from, I don't know, the hungry one, Karsht, the god, the deity that these follow. And as a result, it made the entire group very nervous about each other and needing to double check if everybody was who they said they were, or if they were all like Becca and had been lying for 2 months to them. And if you are able to kind of work that into your 13th age game, again, when you make players stretch outside of the here are the rules and the lines I have to follow inside, and go into the, you know, it's not always as it seems, you can get consumed, it can consume other things, you start to stretch players, which is pretty cool. And looking at these monsters, I do not particularly want to interact with them as a player at all.
You mean you don't like acid sweat?
No, I don't like acid sweat. I also don't really want, you know, to be a spiritual meal for one of these and lose my incremental advantage.
Yeah, that's fair.
Our advancement, yes.
Nick, why don't you take us into the Nangreal?
Yeah, so we all know that cats and dogs don't get along well together, and the Orlanthi or the Alinx, catish people, and kind of makes sense that somehow Chaos would adopt the dog. And Nangreals are kind of like just humanoid dog men, kind of equivalent to the place of gnolls from, I guess, F20 games. They all have the bestial spite ability, which means that as a player character, if you have the beast rune, you're going to be vulnerable to all their attacks. And it seems like every Glorantha game that I've played, the beast rune has been one that's been a common one that's been used. The player's going to get sick of coming up against them if the beast rune is prevalent among them. But that may be exactly why the Nangreals are coming after them. Who knows? And it's also interesting that each of the Nangreals that are stated here, each one has kind of a unique way of additionally interacting with the escalation die. Right? It's not just a matter of they're going to get it. It's that sometimes they don't even have a particular attack unless they're benefiting from the escalation die. Or if there's a pack of them in the combat, then they are able to adjust the die roll of your, whether or not you're going to get the escalation die, they're able to adjust that one point in their favor. Nasty creatures.
This is a great addition sort of for the Chaos Rises setting for 13th Age Glorantha, because it brings sort of a favored sort of F20 style creature it transforms it to bring it to Glorantha. Springboarding off the myths of the bad dogs, the dogs that tormented Yinkin, the cat father, brother of Orlanth, and the plague, the Hjortlings, in the darkness. It's a very clever way to bring some additional creatures and leverage, you know, all of the things that have been published in 13th Age to bring them to Glorantha with a real connection to the deep mythology. But we have to remember, of course, too, that even though the Orlanthi of Dragon Pass are the cat people and don't like dogs. There are lots of people around Glorantha who do like dogs, and not all dogs are bad. In fact, dogs shouldn't be bad, but mythologically, some of them again tainted by chaos or influenced by other terrors, and so it's very sad. The Orlanthi of Dragon Pass are anti-dog by and large, and the Nangreal, you know, are an expression of that. But we can find some good dogs in Glorantha too.
You just got to take a rolled up newspaper against them. That's the preferred weapon.
Yeah, it's also interesting. Again, looking back at like the Semitic mythologies, cats were generally considered good, and people hated dogs. Right? They just roamed. Wild dogs roamed the streets, and they did not. That was not a positive metaphor to use, like we would use it today. Now, Becca, you've got a nice, not gross, not icky, reusing the words that you guys have thrown out today, not undisturbing chaos creature. Let's talk about the delightful scorpion man.
Yeah, the scorpion man, he's just a sweet, cuddly teddy bear all around, and not a big deal. Okay, that was a total lie. And the scorpion man, or men, it is a centaur, so upper half of human, lower half of scorpion. And the scorpion man has his greatest desire to be eaten by the scorpion queen and be reborn into the world stronger. This is also one of the chaotic creatures that, similar to the brew, can take you and change you, the PC. So one of those where you're not necessarily going to want to rescue your friend from them, but you're going to want to make sure that they are put down.
Well, and then going back to like Mark's comment about the brew convert, this is the group that says, oh, Nick's character was captured by scorpion people. The next time we fight a scorpion person, one of them looks like Nick's character and has all of the memories, all of the knowledge, all of the techniques that Nick had, but has been reborn as this most primal and chaotic version of that PC. That's terrifying. Usually because they eat you and then birth you out.
As if fighting human-sized scorpions weren't terrifying enough.
Yeah. The other thing that scorpion men do is they devour runes. And what that means is they are going to have a bit more of a magical flavor to them, as they have taken on the runic magic from whatever they have already devoured, and they get bonuses and are yet another table to kind of change up the flavor of your scorpion men that you are fighting. Whether that's because, you know, they have the life rune in them and they don't die when you first drop them to zero. So you have to hit them again. Yeah, so it's another one of those chaos beasts that help you realize every single fight is not going to be the same.
So, Evan, you have played RuneQuest and played in Glorantha longer than any of us. You have played back, you know, through the golden era of RQ2 and then through what we walking downtown Frederick referred to as the dark times. And now we're living in this golden age again of Gloranthan revival. What can you add to our discussion about scorpion men that we may not be covered in the book, may not be well known?
Well, you know, the great thing about Glorantha and the production of these, you know, monsters and opponents, you know, you start out in the original game, second edition RuneQuest, and you just have stats. And, you know, it's an unusual, you know, as Becca described it, a scorpion centaur, you know, the man-sized man part and, you know, sort of horse-sized scorpion. It's terrifying. And then the book that introduced you to Glorantha, the Cults of Terror, come out to add the dimension of, you know, these aren't just a strange, crazy chaos creature where, you know, you've mushed a scorpion and a person together, but instead there's an entire society centered around scorpion queens and the consumption and sort of annihilation of other beings and then reconstituting them recreating them in the image of the Scorpion Queen to serve chaos, to serve these unnatural hungers, and to constantly raid and maraud and consume, which is all, it adds this depth and dimension to, just a monster. This is not just, open the door, fight the monster, take the treasure. It's, these things are a terrifying blight on the world and a threat more, not just to your life, but to your very existence and identity. And 13th Age Galantha does this great, further development of introducing us to one of the great Scorpion Queens as a, potentially an entire campaign arc to deal with her during the Chaos Rises period. So it's really furthering and elaborating on these themes that have been around for almost 40 years, building into this profoundly interesting world.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with more discussions, diving into the chaos beasts that inhabit Dragon Pass and the world of Glorantha. As always, thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay gaming. We'll be back in 2 weeks with more iconic podcasts. Thank you all for listening, and to our patrons, thank you as always for supporting.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com. or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.